Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a look at K-12 education, specifically how multimedia technology is being used in classrooms and what that really means for the IT teams who have to support it all. We've got a really fascinating stack of sources here that get into the current trends, the tools that are, really dominating instruction right now.
And also the challenges, the tech challenges, and maybe more importantly, the legal ones.
Exactly. And when we say multimedia, just to be clear, we mean it in that classic sense: text, images, audio,
The
video,
multi part.
the multi-part, yeah.
And this deep dive, it's really for anyone who's working in school technology or, just needs to get up to speed on this stuff quickly.
A shortcut, basically.
It's a shortcut. We want to explain not just what tools are popular, but how using them creates these core support challenges, especially the ones tied to legal mandates.
Okay, so where do we start? Because this feels like a very modern problem.
Well, what's surprising is how long this has actually been going on. You picture a student making a video today, you think Chromebook, right? Or a tablet.
Something new, yeah.
But you can actually trace the beginnings of this, of student-driven multimedia software, back 3 decades.
3 decades, you mean the 90s?
To the early 1990s, yeah.
Wow. So we're not talking about a post-2000 thing at all. We're talking about programs like, what, HyperCard and HyperStudio? For those old Apple computers.
Exactly. Those were the big ones, marketed heavily to schools. They were, revolutionary for their time. They let students and teachers mix text, images, sound clips.
And that interest just took off, right? Once the hardware could actually handle it.
It exploded in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Suddenly you had computers with basic video cards, color displays.
No, and audio cards and speakers became standard.
Right. It went from being a cool idea to something you could actually do in a classroom.
That history is fascinating. But you mentioned the legal side, and for public schools, that often trumps everything else.
It does. And that brings us straight to the non-negotiable foundation for all of this: accessibility.
Okay, sure.
Schools are public institutions.
Yeah.
So the second they use technology for teaching, they have to follow the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA.
So this isn't just a best practice, it's the law.
It's a legal pillar. This is where IT strategy begins and ends. The ADA means that every single piece of multimedia, a slideshow, a video, anything, it must be accessible to all students.
Including students who use things like screen readers.
Precisely. So when you're talking about IT budgets, you think about devices. But the real driver, the thing that shapes everything, is this legal mandate.
Okay, so with that in mind, let's talk about the absolute workhorse of the classroom, the slideshow.
PowerPoint, Google Slides.
All of them. And it's not just teachers using them anymore, students are creating them constantly as projects.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget that the tech to even do this well is pretty new. The ability to just capture high-res images or video with a built-in webcam on a Chromebook.
That's a relatively recent thing for schools.
Very recent. Suddenly, every kid has a mini production studio, but everything it produces has to meet these strict legal standards.
And the way they're shared has totally changed. It's not a file on a hard drive anymore.
Yeah.
Students and teachers now share and embed web-based presentations right into their virtual classrooms.
And that shift from a local file to something that's live on the web, that's the whole challenge right there. That content has to be compliant 24/7.
So IT has to step in.
IT has to deploy and support accessibility checkers. These tools are absolutely critical for managing that legal risk.
So, for someone listening who isn't familiar with these, what do these checkers actually look for? What makes something non-compliant?
They're mostly looking for structural things that trip up assistive text. So number one is missing alternative text on images.
That's the description a screen reader reads out loud.
Exactly. They also check for missing navigation aids.
What do you mean by navigation aids?
That's basically the internal structure, like using proper headings and lists so a user with a screen reader can jump through the document instead of having to listen to the whole thing from start to finish.
Okay.
And finally, they check for missing metadata, things like the author, the title, all stuff that helps process the document correctly.
That makes sense. The automation enforces good structure, but the sources also say these checkers aren't perfect.
Not even close. And this is a huge point. They provide a baseline, but they can't verify everything.
So, what do they miss?
The big one is color contrast.
Wait, really? The built-in tools in like Google Slides or PowerPoint can't check if the text color is readable against the background color.
They can't do it reliably, no, which is a massive issue for students with low vision.
So if a school just relies on those built-in checkers, they're still at risk legally.
Absolutely.
Oh.
So IT then have to find and support other tools,
mm-hmm.
sometimes third-party add-ons you have to pay for just to check for contrast. It adds this whole other layer of complexity and cost.
That really drives home the point about compliance being an ongoing cost. So moving from slideshows to video, that seems like the next big step up in complexity.
It is. The demand for video editing in schools has just spiked. The sources point to three main drivers.
Okay, well, where are they?
First, you've got teachers creating their own videos to supplement instruction. You know, short lessons, that kind of thing.
The flipped classroom model.
Right. Second, you have students making videos to show what they've learned. It's replacing the old book report. And the third driver is capturing student performances.
Like sports or the school play.
Exactly. Sports teams reviewing games, or maybe the theater department recording a show, which can get pretty technically demanding.
What's interesting there is the disconnect in expectations.
A huge one. A lot of users, teachers and students both, they really underestimate the time it takes to make even an acceptable video.
But at the same time, they also
overestimate the need for professional quality editing. For most class projects, you know, a few simple cuts is really all you need. Good enough is fine.
But because you have such different needs, from a simple student project to a full theater production, one piece of software won't work for everyone.
No, you have to manage a whole ecosystem of tools.
So let's break that down. What's at the simple end?
You start with web-based options. YouTube, for instance, lets you do some very basic trimming after you've uploaded a video.
But the challenge there is the upload itself, right? Sending a huge video file over a school network.
That and the tools are just very limited by design. So then you move up to consumer software. For anyone on a Mac, that's iMovie.
Which comes pre-installed. It's pretty easy to use.
It is. It handles most academic projects just fine.
Yeah.
But then you get to the high school level and there's a real interest in teaching professional software.
And what's the key difference there? Why need it at all?
It's about control and complexity. Professional software lets you work with multiple video and audio tracks at the same time.
Which brings us back to that theater department example.
Exactly. Imagine you have three cameras on stage, plus a separate high-quality audio recording. To edit that together, to sync it all up perfectly, you need a professional tool. iMovie just can't do that.
So that's the dilemma for IT. A single tool just won't cut it.
Not at all. You might have middle schoolers using a web tool, teachers using iMovie, but the theater department needs something much more powerful. IT has to support that whole range, which means more licenses, more training, more everything.
That tiered approach is so important to understand. Let's pivot now to a technology that basically became essential overnight, video conferencing.
Yeah, during the 2020 pandemic. That was the glue holding everything together. It was the platform for remote teaching.
And even though most remote instruction has wound down, the tool itself isn't going away?
No, it's found its long-term place.
Mm.
It's still incredibly effective for things like professional development, training, and meetings.
It saves on travel time and costs.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
And it's just as effective as being there in person for many of those things.
But it can also enhance in-person classes, too, which is an interesting application.
Right. Students can record video conferences of their group discussions or presentations.
And then they can share that recording for review.
Exactly. The instructor can go back and assess not just the final product, but the collaboration process itself. It makes that interaction permanent and accessible.
But that very feature, the ease of recording students, that leads us right to the biggest issue.
It really does. The critical consideration here is privacy. The privacy of students and, importantly, their caregivers.
Explain that tension.
Well, educators have good reasons to ask students to turn their cameras on for engagement, for interaction. But doing so, especially when they are at home, poses a serious threat to their privacy.
Because you're recording their personal environment.
You're recording their home. Maybe a parent walks through the background. That image is now captured, archived on a server somewhere. The school is now responsible for that data and the liability that comes with it. It's a huge data management challenge.
So if we pull all this together for you, the listener, the big takeaway here is that understanding multimedia in schools is about managing this constant tension.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with a history that goes all the way back to HyperCard. You have this huge range of user needs.
From web tools to professional editors.
And it's all underpinned by that absolute non-negotiable legal mandate of ADA compliance.
And if you look at the role of the IT professional in all this, it's completely changed. It's not about fixing hardware anymore.
It's proactive.
It's proactive ecosystem management. They're managing this complex web of software that's being driven by very specific curricular goals on one side and very strict legal requirements on the other.
And that balancing act just gets harder as the technology gets more personal. The ability to record and share a student's discussion is a fantastic instructional tool.
It offers incredible insight, no doubt.
But when you factor in the need to protect student and caregiver privacy, the use of that technology raises a really important final question.
It does. And that is, how must schools balance the incredible utility of recorded discussions and presentations against the inherent and permanent threat to personal privacy that comes with this kind of constant digital documentation?
That is something for you to mull over until our next deep dive.